This is CliffCentral.com.
He has been named one of the most influential Africans by New African Magazine. He's worked with over 100 diverse brands across every region on the continent. He was born and raised in a humble place called Kimberley, but he's really changed the world. He's the founder of Brand Leadership, and he's sitting opposite me now, Tebe Ikalafeng. I've known you such a long time, Tebe. It's nice to see you.
My goodness, it's true. Good to see you again, Gareth. Yeah. Happy to be here with you.
Thank you, man. And there's so much to talk about and to celebrate in your life.
Thank you.
It's also a nice time of year to kind of reflect on things.
True that. You know, this time of the year, it's that time where you say, how was my year? Or how's my life? Where am I going next year? Where am I going in my life? So you're right. It's a perfect time. It's like, you know, easing out of this year into the new year.
I hope you won't be upset by this, but when I think of Black excellence,
yes,
I really do think of you. Maybe
and why not just excellence, period?
No, I know, but this is a term that people use.
I don't understand it, because I always tell people that I don't do anything Black. I just do everything great.
But that's exactly what I'm getting at, is that, first of all, you really are a self-made man.
Thank you.
You've done all the hard lifting yourself. When I think about how many people in this country talk about things like Black excellence or any of this stuff, they don't take into consideration that it is an individual pursuit to make these things happen. Of course, you have people in your life, and you have advisors, and you have friends, and you have partners, and things that have happened, and other people involved. But it's the drive of that one person that makes these things come true. And I have known you for a long time, so I'm biased in your favor.
Thank you.
But it does look to me...
I need fans.
Well, it does look to me like you've really carved out, through a lot of hard work and relationship building and brand building and understanding what people are after. You know, the world around us is a very complicated place. It seems like you're one of those people who sees it very clearly. You think that's fair?
Well, I think what is fair is that, you know, I come from Kimberley, as you know. I came to this town at the age of 19. I went to Wits University, dropped out, went to America. But throughout all those times, you know, I was explaining to somebody as well the other day, that even when I arrived at Wits, I didn't say, "Mommy, look after me." I said, "Tebe, look after yourself." So all that built in me, you know, a resilience or a way of how to get things in life. Even as young as further down as the age of 14, when I was in Kimberley, I used to work in a furniture shop to pay for my own pocket money. Not that I needed to, but it is just an inner drive. So I think the fair summation of what you say is that I've always worked for what I have. So I've never been given anything in my plate.
Well, as a result of that, you have this really enviable ability to balance work and fun. Because I have seen you having fun. I've seen you hanging around the rich and the famous and the important and the illustrious. And you fit in with them as much as you fit in with anybody who comes off the street to ask you a question. But you're enjoying your life. You're having a fun time. It's nice to be Tebe Ikalafeng, yeah?
Well, people always say to me, "You seem to be playing all the time." I said to them, "I can't tell the difference between work and play, because what I wanted to do with my career, not thinking about it, I've always said that I need to have fun, I need to be happy, I need to be doing the things that I love, I need to be working with the clients that I love, I need to be go to places that I want, to hang around the people that I love." So that's why, you know, whether it's summiting a mountain in Russia, the highest mountain in Europe in Russia, or whether it's hanging out in Devil's Pool in Zambia, or whether it is jumping at the pyramids in Egypt. I do all those in between my work in those countries. So it's about having fun. So yes, I have fun. I have a lot of fun. I have a lot of fun building great brands. I have a lot of fun enjoying myself doing it.
So it all started because people talk about brands now. It never used to be something people spoke about. Remember, people used to talk about marketing and advertising.
You know, in 1994, when I came back to South Africa, because I'd left for a short while to go study, and when I came back to South Africa and I wrote my first book, Conquer the Job Market, it was called, because the orientation was all about getting a job. in the new South Africa. But I remember the opening phrases of my of the book. In all the interviews, I always have to tell people is that it's how to market yourself, how to differentiate yourself, how to distinguish yourself. We didn't call it brand then, but we always had been doing those things. But correct, everything today is about brand. But brand has been around since the beginning of time. Brand has always been there, you know, in terms of how the Egyptians and everybody used to mark their cattle and farmers mark their cattle. That's how it started, the whole idea.
It's called distinction. A brand. Yeah.
It's called, they may not have used that word, but it is the idea that I'm branding. In other words, I'm carving out a space for myself that is unique or that is different from everybody else.
Do you think everyone has a brand? Because I meet people, and you meet like someone who's got 500 followers on YouTube, and they tell you, oh, I'm a brand. Does everyone have a brand?
Everybody is a brand.
Okay.
Everybody has a brand because everybody has... There is a summation of who that person is, who they are, what they stand for. But what is different is not every brand is valuable, not every brand is desirable, not every brand is ubiquitous. But everybody has a brand because all that a brand is, it's that unique proposition. That's that which distinguishes who you are. And when you are born, you call you Gareth Lefa. You know it. In your family, Gareth Lefa meant something. Angelo, you look at my family as well. I was born as a first grandchild and they call me Tebe Itzile. The shield has arrived. So to them, that's their brand for me, which is the foundation of my brand. So my job throughout my life or my destiny throughout my life is in many ways to try and become that shield for my family, the shield for my family name, the shield for... And now the way I see my life is almost the shield for the network, for the Continental brand.
Yeah, and this is such a huge and varied continent. And I want to talk about what you've learned about Africa and what you can share. Because sometimes South Africans think that we're separate from it. And sometimes we refer to everything north of the Limpopo as being Africa. And we have no idea of the diversity just between Tanzania and Uganda, for example.
But somebody said to me this morning, funny enough, says, when are you going to Africa again? You must bring me...
I'm in Africa, you idiot.
I said, which Africa? I'm in Africa already. But you know what it is? It's a history of South Africa. You know, the history of South Africa has always been about divide and rule.
Yeah.
And part of divide and rule in the colonial sense, or from a South African perspective, because having been the last colony, the last European colony, has always been about separating South Africa and creating this colony at the southern tip of Africa and creating a narrative that says we are not like them.
Us and them, yeah.
It's an us and them. In many ways, it was a defense mechanism for the rulers, but it was also quite detrimental to the identity of South Africans.
Yeah, and has led directly to the xenophobia that we see rise up every
now
and
then. Challenges we have about xenophobia, all the challenges we have about trade, all the challenges we have about, you know, when you speak to us, even as close as Zimbabwe, you speak to them about doing business with South Africa, they always say, oh, those South Africans are bunch of colonists. They come here, they want to tell us how to do things. So the damage is quite embedded in terms of where South Africans, how South Africans see themselves or how we see ourselves in relation to the rest of the continent. We are like Americans in many ways. We see ourselves as us and the rest of the world. And as a result, that's why South Africans do not necessarily travel as much. And when we do travel, we go to Europe. We don't see. So, you know, when they all get to find out that I've been to more than half of the continent, as much as I've been to more to every single continent in the world, they then say, you love Africa. You're always going to Africa. I say, no, I don't love Africa. I'm always home. I say, I don't travel. I'm always home. Whether I'm in Zambia, whether I'm in Kenya, when I'm in Nigeria, whether I'm in Egypt, I'm just home. I'm just looking, just trying to understand the other parts of who I am because this continent is part of our identity.
Well, it's the place that all of us come from eventually.
Well, as they say, it's a cradle of humankind.
Right. So it seems to me kind of sad that it's taken this long to pay as much attention as we're suddenly starting to now. Because everybody's saying, well, this is the continent to watch because we've got the largest young, untapped market
70%
of consumers in the world.
70% of the continent is under the age of 30.
Right.
And as exactly say, you know, it's estimated that we are as a continent, the consumer spend is going to grow by over 200-300 billion. So yes, this is the place to be if you're in the world. And they say it's the last bastion or whatever, it's the last place for the rest of the world to come. That's why now you can begin to see whether it's Louis Vuitton or whether it's Burberry, they're all now coming to Africa to take inspiration or appreciation, because everywhere else has been exhausted. This is the only place that is growing, that is ripe, that is inspirational, that is untainted.
Yeah, I'm proud of that. I'm proud for us, because it's about time. Like, we got our place in the sun, you know? So tell me, for your career, because there's a lot that we should cover here. You started working on big brands like Colgate, Palmolive, and Nike right in the beginning of your career.
Indeed. You know, when I...
was that in New York?
That was in New York. I started with Colgate. So what happened is, when I left South Africa in 1989 to go restart... I was at Wits doing a big com in accounting. And do you not see the accountant in me?
Sorry, I fell asleep. I said, what was that?
And I arrived in... and I remember, you know, I didn't do well first year. But the second year, I did well, as one should when you're repeating. And I got a scholarship to go to the U.S. And I arrived in the U.S. and I was in a nightclub. And a friend of mine says to me, oh, my good, I'd met in South Africa at Wits as well. I didn't realize he'd left to the U.S. because I just saw him disappear. Bumped into me in a club of all South Africans in Cleveland, Ohio. He said, what are you doing here? So I'm coming to finish my accounting degree. He's like, dude, you don't look like an accountant. I'm like, what do you mean? He's like, it's not your thing. You need to find who you are, Tebe. He says, I would have thought maybe you're like a marketing guy. That's more like, it seems to be that's what lights up your face, if you will. Not this accounting thing. But he also said something is important. He says, you're so far from South Africa. Do not worry about being judged. Do not worry about finishing school later. He says, dump everything you did at South Africa. Restart your life here. Or restart your career. And I didn't restart. I just went to varsity, you know, ended up being named best marketing student by the American Marketing Association. But I wasn't really thinking much about even any of those things. And I applied for a scholarship for a job. And out of 80 applications, only one responded positively, and that was Colgate Palmolive. So I'm like, what a waste of 79 stamps, you know. And I positioned myself correctly and just used one stamp. Because remember, those days we used to leak these bloody things. So imagine how much...
It's taking you hours.
How much licking, how much saliva I used up and stamps and posting these things. At Colgate, you know. And I was so fortunate to end up at Colgate. Because at that stage, Philip Berry was the highest ranking black executive at Colgate. I don't know why. He just took a liking from the paper. Then I flew to New York, got to meet me, you know, and they're like, fine, we're going to start you here. And then you can end up in South Africa where you come from. I was like, perfect. That's what I want. I said, what I want to do is I want to be in South Africa at the turn of apartheid.
Yeah, because you came back at such a crucial time, 94. Now, there was a lot of opportunity in the air, but there was also a lot of nervousness. So the market was unstable.
Indeed. But there's also a great optimism. You know, it was a time of change, and it was a time for change makers. So it was a time for people who are daringly cautious, who said, you know, I'm going for this. It's a new time. I want to be part of the architects of the future. So at that time, we all had such great hope for the country, as we did for the continent. So yes. Nervousness, but it was nervousness from excitement rather than nervousness from this is the beginning of hell. Yes, there were naysayers, but we proved them all wrong in the beginning stages of the country.
Now, you've hosted TV shows. I remember your CNBC African Marketing Media Money show. And you've obviously also been on the tourism board. You were the deputy chair.
I'm still the deputy chairperson.
So these are all very varied things. Are you one of those people who needs to do a whole lot of things because you are just understimulated by doing one?
You know, I said to a friend of mine, a high school friend of mine who'd known me for, I mean, a primary school friend of mine who's known me for over 30 years. I said to him, I'm so exhausted. He says, why? He says, I said, I'm doing so much. I'll sit on 4 boards. I consult. I write. I speak. I travel. I climb mountains. I do so many things. I said, this is also exhausting. He says, how could it be exhausting? That's exactly who you've always been all your life. I said, what do you mean? He says, as a young kid, just don't forget, you're an altar boy, you're in the choir, you're doing chess, you're playing piano, you're playing violin.
You were an overachiever?
So he says,
your whole life long?
Well, I was top of the class from standard one
all
the way. So he said, I think it's an overdoer.
Overachiever. Own it.
I guess part of my DNA has always been about not doing one thing, but doing everything that stimulates and excites me. So I don't select,
Have you ever done anything badly? Have you ever taken on an interest or a hobby or a business and it just wasn't for you?
Well, I'm not sure if we call them badly or if we've had lessons in life.
Okay.
So we've had tons of lessons, as we all do, and as one should, because that's how you get better. But I don't look back at any experience with regret. I always look forward with the lessons that I take from each one of them.
Yeah, but there are probably some things that you didn't enjoy as much.
I think it also goes back to my childhood. So as a teenager, I'd play, every time I tried tennis, so I'd play tennis. And when I get into tennis, I say to my mother, even with my part-time jobs, I need tennis racket, I need tennis shoes, I need to go all those things. Then we all go gung-ho, we get all those things. 3 months later, which is typically me, if I'm bored as hell and
all
I hate it,
in the room.
Gone. Move on, football, same thing, move on, piano, move on, violin, move on. But what it did for me is I never looked at it as failures.
Yeah.
You know, because I always tell people I quit everything when I was the very best I could have been at it.
That's beautiful.
You know, and
at you're
that
at the
point,
top and then you give up because that's the best you'll get at.
That's the best I'm going to get at.
But so, that takes massive self-awareness.
It does, and it takes a lot of resolve. And I was explaining as well, again, it's so funny these days, people, we get to talk about this so much. And I was explaining to another friend, I said, you know, because I was top of the class for so long, my entire school, and because, you know, I was head boy, I was head this,
right.
It built a lot of self-confidence in me. But it also built a lot of self-awareness because I then get to understand myself, you know. I was explaining, you know, just very last night, I was explaining to somebody in high school, I used to teach my classmates after class. The same subject we went to class with, we were all taught, I used to give them extra lessons after class. And it built the confidence of you can lead, you can guide, you can help. That's sort of the story. I think it's a story of how I got to where I am and never ever having many regrets.
But most people, Tebe, most people, if they played tennis and they weren't the world champion, they would think that if we just keep practicing and we just keep trying, we'll get there eventually. It takes a much stronger person to go, okay, I've had this experience. This has been great. I have no regrets. I know that my limit is, I've reached the upper limit of my abilities in this discipline. It's time for something new. How do you know that? How do you know when you're at the best of your abilities?
To me, you know it when you get up in the morning and you have no more energy or interest or excitement about going to do that. Then you say to yourself, oh, I guess this is not my thing. And then you moved on. Because when I get into anything, as I do still now, I give it my all. And it almost becomes my identity. You know, people say to me now, are you a mountaineer?
They
said to me, are you a mountaineer? I said, no. They said, but you are constantly climbing mountains, constantly training. I said, no. When I started climbing high mountains, I then had to give it my all.
Yeah, but we talk about this in a minute because you're mad. I don't think this is good for you. And I don't want to read some story one day about how there's Tebe's body's lying in the ice on the top of some horrible mountain.
Do you know Vali Musa, who's the chairperson of WWF, and I sat on the board of WWF as well. And Vali Musa said to me, we were in Kruger together 3 weeks ago. He says, Tebe, you and I and Murphy Morobe and Vusi Kangile of Tab Investments, we are going to do Basecamp Everest. I'm like, why are we doing Basecamp? Why can't we do the real thing?
You know, but
these guys are in the 60s. And I, you know, and I said, but you know, that's what we do. You go with life. What I do, Gareth, what I do, and as you've known me all my life, all my at least adult life, is I've always tried to have fun. I've always given everything I do my all. I have always gone in, never ever looking down or looking up to anybody, just looking at people, talking to them and getting to know them.
They're all
and
your
having
peers,
fun.
Everyone.
Everybody's my peer. I don't see anybody's better than me. I don't see anybody below me.
I'm amazed, though, because the corporate world can suck the life out of you. It can be very dreary. It can be very boring. It can be very procedural. There's a lot of stuff that great ideas go to corporate environments to die. And you were saying just now, when you wake up in the morning and you don't have the passion and the enthusiasm for something, you know it's time to move on. But somehow, you haven't hit that with the corporate world.
Well, I did.
You did?
Because maybe I could have, and I'm glad you brought it in this way, because now one of my most defining experiences, certainly.
Tell
so,
me.
So there's a couple of, so if you talk, let's talk corporate for a second. So when I joined Colgate in New York, it was an incredible environment, because we used to go to work whenever, 8 o'clock, leave at 8 p.m. You used to see people around you. There was an energy around that space. But then I was on number 300 Colgate, 300 Park Avenue, which is the number one corporate street in New York.
Right.
So all the big head offices were there at that time. And but there was an energy, you know, you're working with people, talking to somebody in Brazil, talking to somebody in South Africa. They were all over the world. So there's an energy. When I came to South Africa, and then I joined Colgate here, and I transferred to South Africa. And here, when I arrived, first I was dressed very corporately, because I was wearing custom-made suits and shirts. It was just the antithesis of how they were doing things here. First, it was just casual. Second, I was the first guy in the office, including the CEO, ever to have a cell phone, because it just started. And I was the first one to have a cell phone. I just defined myself differently. But I also used to come to work at 8:30, and at 4, everybody is clearing the desks. That really worked against sort of how I thought is a definition of how corporate success is. And slowly but surely, it was eating at me, and I left. But then I also went to Sun International, which is a great company at the time. I'm sure it still is. And I worked for Sun International, but I lasted only for 14 months. And why did I leave Sun International? I learned it was a very defining moment for me, is where every time, because I was in a gaming division, every time I had to go to these gaming environment, Morula-san, Carousel and all those, and I used to see people dumping money into slot machine and dummy. I thought to myself, this is the most inane, most dumbest thing I've seen anybody does. I said, how can that? First, it was two contradictions. One, it was the poor people who were doing that.
Yeah.
And then second, it was something that I found unstimulating for anybody to be doing that. And I said to myself, I actually hate the idea of gambling. What am I doing here? Because if I was excited by gambling, I would have gone every day and be, you know, my eyes would light up when I see money, ka-ching, ka-ching. But I didn't. Every time I saw that, it
depressed you.
It depressed me. And when I left that place, I couldn't wait to get out. You know, and matter of fact, before I even go there, I'll tell you one thing.
Sure.
Before I got there, I got an interview with SAB Miller, SAB then.
Yes.
And the interview with SAB, and the guy said to me at the SAB in the morning, went to see him. And you know, because I'm quite energetic, we speak in the morning, we spoke, you know. Then after, I called them about a week later and I asked them, how did the interview go? They're like, my goodness, you're a great guy. They're like, lots of energy, you look like you could be an amazing guy. But there's one small problem. I said, what's the problem? He don't drink. I'm like, what's not a problem? It's who I am. So I know I can't be here. So, you know, there's different things. If you don't love the product, don't go to the place. So that's one thing I learned. But
isn't
then
that true for investing as well?
But that's true for everything else. I think Warren Buffett would have said something like that as well. But then I moved on to Nike, as you know, which was my probably most successful period, you know, having won over 75 awards, including Cannes, DNAD, One Show, all those global awards, and tons of luries, you know. But I was there for 6 years. But by my fifth year, I'd had enough. And you say, what was enough? When I joined Nike, it was JV with Nike International. It wasn't a Nike fully fledged. There was a very there's an entrepreneurial spirit about it. There was building. It was new. We were signing up Kaiser Chiefs, signing up Comrades, Springboks. Everything was so new. And it required a very entrepreneurial person, an entrepreneurial environment. We did all that. And then by the third or fourth year, Nike then bought shareholding at Nike. And when they bought the shareholding, they then brought in the corporate truck. You know how it goes. Spreadsheets, reporting, responding to the BCCs and the CCs on the email. So nothing has got to do with
about
you.
Meetings
about meetings. And I said, but Tebe, you're an entrepreneurial thinker. You need a stimulating environment. You're probably more. You're a creative person who wants. Sorry.
It's all right.
Who wants to be in? So I said, Tebe, you want to be in a place where things are happening, where you are making things happen. These guys are wanting you to make Excel spreadsheets, and you know.
Yeah, you can't do that. That's not a stimulating environment for you.
But it's what corporates do.
Yeah,
it's what corporates do.
So this is why I asked the question about the corporate world, because branding. And coming up with great branding ideas and being able to market things. I mean, you've put presidents into power.
Well, again, it was very entrepreneurial thinking because, you know, here I am, a South African guy, get pulled out of South Africa into Republic of Ghana, which was the first country, Republic of Ghana, and the then candidate, Professor Mills, and Mahama, who became president next to him, they then said, we are looking to get back into power. We've been out of power for 2 terms. We have no clue how to do it.
Uh-huh.
And we have no money. That's great for entrepreneurial.
That's fantastic.
And, you know, when we launched...
And look at Ghana now.
And when we launched the campaign, I'll tell you what, when we launched the campaign, the opposition called a press conference. And at a press conference, they said, this is impossible. Somebody is behind this. This is not the same. This is not the same party. Because we had rejuvenated them. We'd created an identity for who they are. And they went on to win the presidency.
Beautiful.
So yes, so if the environment is not stimulating, that's when you know. Because what you need to know, you know, when you talk about self-awareness, what you need to know what excites you. Not what makes you money. Because you see, any fool can make money, but not everybody can find happiness.
What do you love about the idea of working with brands and brand building? What is it about that that makes you happy?
What I love about that is when I get an opportunity to work on a transformational brand opportunity. You know, a brand that changes the way of life, that changes how people view not just the continent but themselves and about the people. You know, when we started in the Nike days, when we started, we're number 3, so there was a competitiveness about it. In terms of how we're going to get to number 1. We needed to win. That's one. But then when you look at all the others that I did since I left the corporate and started working for myself, like the rebranding of Unisa, the rebranding of Transnet, Prasa, SA Express, the list is. And I'll tell you why there's such a preponderance of public sector in my beginning of my career, my consulting career. I met a friend of mine who had no adverts, and she said to me, don't bother with private sector brands like Standard Bank, MTN. So don't bother with those things. There were no MTNs then. I mean, but just for Coca-Cola's and all that. So why? He says, because you're a change maker. You need to be in an environment where you're going to create change. Many of these brands are so established. They are set in their ways. But in a new South Africa, you have an opportunity to be
reinvigorate
part of a new renaissance, you know?
Yeah.
So if you look at every time I drive and I see the Transnets, I say, that's our work. I say, UNISA, the mergers, that's our work. I look at all these things, I say, that is our work. I wanted to be part of that. That's what excites me. What I don't like is going to meetings on status reports and all those things, because I don't think we get anything done. I don't think we get anything done going to places and talking about changing, making the logo bigger, making the color darker, taking a bigger ad. That's not
all right.
Life.
So come, I'm going to leverage you here because I get you to consult me for free. So we started this company, 3.5 years ago. We're in producing specialist curated audio, you know, content of a branded nature some of the time. Podcasting is important. What do you reckon we need to do? I mean, how, in your experience of seeing, also seeing how things have changed and disruptions taken place in so many industries, what are we doing right? What are we doing wrong from the outside point of view?
Well, I think what you are definitely doing right, what you definitely did right, is you are disruptive. Because as you well defined yourself when you started in the beginning, you said it's not radio as you know it. Mm-hmm. You were at that point where everybody else was understanding being in radio is about standing behind a mic in a big building with massive infrastructure and everybody looking at you. But you spotted the opportunity that. But everybody is no longer sitting in a room and listening to the radio. Everybody has got the radio in their hands. It's a mobile phone, it's an iPad and all those. I need to take the brand to them. So I think that was very disruptive and it was excellent. So I can't say you've done anything necessarily wrong, but I think, in our offline discussion earlier about when I saw you then with a touch, central incubation. I then said to myself, my goodness, so this is how he's going to multiply his audiences. Mm. And this is how his brand is going to become an enabler brand. Because what he now does is he now understands that we live in a digital world. And in the digital world, he could be that enabling brand which spots all those young, creative, digital minds and enables them. So it could be Touch Central, not from radio,
Massive Metro.
So anything that is digital. So you almost have to say to yourself, well, Central, Cliff Central is not so much about radio. Cliff Central is about how to get to a mobile consumer, and we can get to them. Our entry point was radio, but we can go beyond. So the beauty about Cliff Central is, while you started in radio, it doesn't necessarily mean you are locked into a media to a radio. What you are, you're probably a media. A medium rather than a particular
and a digital vehicle. One at that. Yeah.
You're a digital medium, so I guess if there's an opportunity which you spotted, I think that's something I would have said. You, build onto that.
You must have,
and then think beyond South Africa. Because remember, being in the digital space, you are already beyond South Africa. Because the bit about digital is that digital is boundaryless. Digital is
Everybody on this continent has
everybody has got a phone.
Yeah.
Over 80% of us have got access to a mobile phone in the continent.
And we all, that's where we're going to do most of our work, our communication, our marketing, our purchasing, everything. I mean, so Tebe, the internet, this has changed everything, right? You've seen it happen in your life.
The internet is everything.
Because when you started at Colgate Palmolive, they didn't take the internet seriously.
No. It was all about how to get to the people, to the consumer physically. Remember, we used to get onto trucks and go to townships, go to places and demonstrate how to use a toothbrush, demonstrate how to do washing. We used to go in trucks and that business was the business. But then soon people realized, and as time has gone, you've now noticed, then they said, oh, let's go into mass media. Then we went into mass media. But mass media became still too, if you will, you cannot quite get to your people. Because now there's a realization that I don't have to speak to everybody. I have to speak to Tebe.
Yeah, and mass media advertising, there's huge wastage, right?
Correct. That's what I'm saying. I have to speak to Tebe. Right. So it is not about hoping that by spending R1 million and then I'll get to 30% of my target market. It's about saying that, is it better to spend R100,000 and get to 100% of my target market? Because I know exactly what it is. That's what digital allows you. It allows you to connect directly to your person. It's borderless. It is boundaryless, but it's also dangerous.
Dangerous how?
Well, I mean, you can see now what happens now is in the era of fake news.
Oh, yeah.
In the era. So while digital has brought a lot of opportunities, there's been two areas where it's been absolutely destructive. It's been disruptive, but it's also been destructive.
Yeah.
It's been destructive on two areas. It's been destructive from a cybercrime.
Yeah.
So that's the one thing that we are beginning. You know, when we started with the 419 scandals, that was the beginning of cybercrime. But now we know cybercrime proper, where people are stealing data. I mean, you've seen recently with Uber, a complete database of customer information taken from Uber. And it happens across. Imagine in the digital world, every single thing about Gareth Love is in that portal. That's the one side. There's a criminal side. On the reputation side, you can see where the fake news, people creating fake profiles. I mean, you see what happened with Bell Pottinger in South Africa, for example, as South Africa.
What do you think of that?
Planting all the negative stories which have gone on to damage the reputation of South Africa, the investability of South Africa.
What do you think of that? If ever you got a brief or you had a job and a client that you thought was dodgy and were going to do negative things and be destructive, not just disruptive, have you had to turn people like that away before? Have you managed to dodge some bullets? Have you managed to stay away from people who have those kinds of intentions?
Everything starts with your personal brand. That is the biggest filter, and then your organizational brand. So every brand must have two lines of thinking. It must say, this is who we are and who we associate ourselves with. Mm. But every brand should also say, and this is who we do not associate ourselves with. So if you don't have that clarity and you don't have a moral compass to guide you, remember morality is also, it's relative. Morality is relative. So, but you need a moral compass. So your moral compass may be towards the left or towards the right. So I've never, fortunately, I will say is I've not had opportunity for somebody to say, can we do something destructive about somebody? But having a very clear personal brand, a very clear organizational brand is there are instances where I said, we are not going to do business with these organizations, because by going in that way, they are going to redefine who we are, and it's going to create a negative perception about our brand. So that I'm quite clear about. And to me, I always say it starts with me, who I am and what I'm willing to be associated with. Because as an organization, you become the embodiment of the organization as well. And I know Bell Pottinger very well, by the way, because when I was running elections in Kenya, in 2012, and I bumped into them, so I knew those characters, and we were quite combative towards each other because
they've got their comeuppance.
Well, of course. I mean, you must remember. Look at the destruction that they did in Malawi. Look at some Zambia. So they've been quite destructive around the continent. You know, creating these very negative reputations of perceptions for leaders or the opposition leaders. Which are founded on untruths. Because, you know, branding should not necessarily be founded on untruth. It should be founded on an authenticity and an enduring truth. But unfortunately, because it is a malleable practice, if you will, people then have also looked at it as, can I do something that is expedient? I always say it's not about expediency, it's about durability. Will you be the same person at 50, at 70, at 30, at 40? And I'm proud to say, you know, I'm exactly the same person I was from 15 to 50.
I'll vouch for you for at least the last 20.
Thank you.
What kind of a life do you have when you're not working? Do you take time to read? Do you take time to? I know you do these amazing adventures. I mean, you already told us about climbing Mount Elbrus, Mount Kilimanjaro. You've jumped the highest bungee in the world here in South Africa. I mean, you've done skydiving.
Which I've told you, my life is I lead my life daringly cautious.
What does that mean? You said it before, daringly cautious.
So it means I need to be aware of the dangers, but the dangers should not limit my drive to do things. So, you know, you ask the question, what am I doing when I'm not working? I can't, like I said to you, I can't tell the difference.
To you, it all blurs.
To me, it all blurs. You know, people say, you never have a work-life balance. I said, work-life balance is a very wrong concept, because work-life balance says it's two balls which are battling for battling for balance, if you will. What I rather focus on is work-life alignment. That what I do, right, and what I do for a living, and what I do at home, I should always constantly be interchanged, like the yin and the yang. You can't really tell the difference between me work and play. That's why, you know, in a post on Instagram, people says, "When do you work?" I said, that very post is work, because it's how I take a break in between everything else.
Yeah.
But it's also in doing that how I learn about what I do. You know, I've done this twice now recently in the last 2 months. I've done the Quadri Point, which is the only point in the world where four countries meet.
Where is that?
Which is Botswana, Zambia, Namibia, Zimbabwe.
Up Chobe, yeah.
Victoria Falls, all that.
That area.
And what was interesting about that is it looked like just an adventure, but it was actually a work for me in the end, because it built me in my orientation about what we need to do as a continent. Because when I arrived, a friend of mine said, "Where are we going to stay? How are we going to get to Zimbabwe and Zambia and all those?" I said, "I don't know, but let us at least arrive in Zimbabwe." Then we went and bungee jumped at the Victoria Falls, which is absolutely scary. I don't think I'll ever do something that's scary in my whole life. Well, we don't know, but and we did that. And then I pick up a call, and I called a friend in Zimbabwe. I said, "How do I get to Zambia, where should I go? Zimbabwe, Zambia." I said, "I need to do those 4 points." He's like, "Don't worry, a friend of mine in Botswana will pick you up at the border." That friend in Botswana then took me to the Namibian border. Somebody else picked up in a boat. And then brought us back and then picked us up again. And then another person took us in a boat from Botswana into Zambia. And then in a car from Zambia to Zimbabwe to do that whole point, all in 36 hours. But I was striving with the one lady from Botswana. I said, "How do you guys do this?" He says, "Quite easy." He says, "We all work together. You pay him, he pays me forward. You pay me, I pay forward." And then he says, "That's how we work. We do that all the time. We change, but we says we work together."
Yeah.
I said, "That is how Africa needs to work to move forward." It was easy for me before as a South African passport holder, because we did not need visas in all those. So, which is the other impediment of Africa's growth, is this craziness about the visas. Is if we should not be needing 30 visas to move around the continent. So, luckily, from tomorrow, Angola doesn't require visa for South African. And luckily for the rest of the continent, as of 2 days ago, if you travel to Kenya, like Ghana, like Benin, like Mauritius, like Rwanda, you don't need a passport if you're a visa if you're an African. Huh. So what South Africa needs to do is to follow suit. Because what you'll see now is a lot of us will be exchanging business the way that explained to you in terms of how it works at a Quadri Point. We all refer forward, and the money stays in the continent.
Beautiful.
And everybody has a job.
And that's not the most revolutionary thing, but it'll work here.
It works here. Yeah. I mean, how crazy is it? I was in Kenya 2 weeks ago, and you do not understand. I spent 14 hours to clear my goods for the launch of a new Pan African brand. 14 hours, and I said, "I'm in Africa. I'm bringing goods from South Africa here. Is there no faster way of doing this?" Ugh. And so that we benefit. Yeah, I do understand we must pay some duties, but can it be quick, and can we move on? Do not frustrate me from trying to bring goods in here, because then I'm going to frustrate you in bringing goods into South Africa. So that's what I'm talking about.
Yeah, and
about.
Not only that, but then it makes you want to do it less next time.
Correct.
If it was so easy, you'd go, "Let's do more business.
Let's do more." And then it'll be reciprocal. That's why reciprocity is so important. That's why, you know, it is unconscionable and unacceptable that perhaps South Africa does not have a reciprocal relationship with Kenya.
Crazy.
That South Africa, if South Africa can get into Kenya without a visa, without a visa, why
then
do
who
we
the hell
need,
do we think we are to not let Kenyans in here?
Which is what I don't understand. Are you with me?
Yeah.
It is just the craziest thing. But unfortunately, we are going to be the last ones, because the rest of the continent is going that way. Nigeria, a friend of mine from Nigeria just landed last night at midnight, and we're talking about it this morning. And he said to me, Nigeria is in discussion of having visa-free for Africans. If we have a visa-free, if it's easy for Africans to get into the rest of the continent, and then we deal with the second thing, which is our flights. Because it is also unnecessary for me if I want to go to Egypt, to go to London first and then come back, or if I want to go to... It's a waste of money. It's inefficient. It is a disaster for the continent. We need to move forward as a continent.
Is it true that you played golf with Tiger Woods?
Well, I didn't play golf with him. I did hang out with him the entire 2-3 days he was in South Africa for the golf, you know. And it was at the height of his stardom, of his talent. He was 23 years old.
Sure.
He was 23 years old. He was number one in the world. Won the Masters. He had already won the Masters. And me and his manager, we spent the entire time together. When he was in South Africa to play at Sun City. So there, if there's one thing I loved about that company then, I'm not sure if it's changed, Nike then, it is just how inspirational it was. That, you know, at 1 minute when you are at the campus, you can bump into Michael Jordan, you can bump into Tiger Woods, you can bump into Pete Sampras, you know, all those stars. Because you know, those guys, we don't want to be like them, but what they do for us is they inspire us to be more of who we are and to be better at what we do.
Well, that's all you've ever done, is inspired people to be more than they are and better than they do. And I think that you've done that with brands. You've done an incredible thing for us. Tebe, I've waited a long time to have you in the studio, so I'm very pleased we finally got to catch up.
Thank you so much.
And I'm delighted you got to spend some time with us.
Well, this has been absolute fun catching up with you as well, and you know, making me recollect some of the fun I've had along the way so far. I'm only 51.
And you look resplendent in your Nigerian outfit and your fez.
Thank you so much. That's good. It's, you know, you go from this to a suit to, as long as you're in Africa, you have the freedom to, you have freedom of 55 countries to express yourself.
Exactly. And we all should.
We all should. You know, I think it's what our fella Kuti said. I must identify with Africa. Then I'll have an identity.
Beautiful. Thank you, Tebe Kalafeng.
Thank you.
This is CliffCentral.com.